Ooh, the Celtics almost pulled that off in Milwaukee, but they just dug themselves too big a hole, and I'm going to talk about it. It's the Friday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Well, the Celtics nearly pulled this thing off, a 128-123 loss to the Milwaukee Bucks. Marcus Smart had that shot, could have cut it to one, could have played a free throw game, could have almost pulled off a miracle, but the Celtics got down 27 points at one point in this game, and that was just too much. The lesson here, try not to get down by 27 points. That's my advice to the Boston Celtics. John Corral is here from MassLive.com. Going to talk about that. Going to talk about Gordon Hayward, because that seems to be a popular topic. And just kind of reassessing a little bit where the Celtics are as we hit basically the midpoint of the season. So let's just start with this game where the Celtics found themselves down 16 points after one and 18 points after two. But at one point in that first half, especially, down 27. Now, the Celtics came back in the third quarter, cut it down to six. Then at the end of the third quarter, Milwaukee went on a run, kind of looked like they were putting things away. But the Celtics had another run in them. Fourth quarter, they outscored the Milwaukee Bucks 36-22 in the fourth quarter. Like I said, there was a stretch there towards the end where the Celtics got it down to nine. And Milwaukee was just kind of like, all right, we're just going to hold you off. We're going to keep you at bay. It's going to be like 11, 12. Thought this would be like a 10, 11 point loss. And the Celtics had one more charge in them. And they did a great job of fighting back and getting it down. They had it down to four. They got a stop on Giannis. And they ended up with Marcus Smart kind of all alone, with an open look at a three. That fell short, didn't work out. So the let's look at the statistics here real quick. Kemba Walker led the Celtics with 40 points. What's really impressive about his 40 points is they all came after the first quarter. It was almost like the reverse Tatum, where Tatum dropped 40 in the first three quarters. Kemba dropped 40 in the last three quarters. He was held scoreless in the first and then went off. 14 of 23 overall for 40 points, 11 rebounds, weirdly just three assists. The Celtics did not have a lot of assists in this game, just 16 on their 43 makes. And I really do think that's a function of the schedule. I mean, I've talked about the schedule a lot. I'm not going to go on a big thing about the schedule anymore. We know what it is. We know what it's been. And thankfully, the worst of this is over. It's still not great because they still play every other day from now until the All-Star break, but the back-to-back stretches, the three games and four night stretches, those are done. The Celtics have a little bit of a homestand now. They can kind of catch their breath a little bit. Again, not great, but it's not what ended up being nine games in 14 nights. So, but they came out slow on the back-to-back. Not surprising that they did that. Not surprising that Milwaukee kind of let up when they had that huge lead and they kind of let the Celtics back into it. And in the two halves, what you had here is first half, the Celtics, again, tired and all of that stuff, but Milwaukee trying to prove a point. Celtics were one of, what, six teams that have beaten the Milwaukee Bucks this season. So Milwaukee out there trying to prove a little something. They came out hot. Giannis was attacking. Got a couple of looks at the rim, and the Celtics a step slow on defense, so they were allowing guys to penetrate, and then driving kicks. And then you have like Brooke Lopez, who was shooting below 30%, like 28% on the season so far. He gets hot and hits three straight threes. And then that triggers this cascading effect of Chris Middleton doing his usual thing and destroying the Celtics. And then Dante DiVincenzo gets into the act and starts destroying the Celtics. And Milwaukee hits 12 of 15 from three in the first half and just could not miss. So you have the Celtics coming out slow. They weren't attacking as much. They kind of started to like probe, and once that didn't work out, they felt like they could have gotten a foul call or something, but once those didn't come through, they just happily settled for threes and started taking threes, I think, kind of like the wrong way. And Milwaukee was taking them the right way off of penetration. And then once they got hot, at that point, it didn't matter whether they were guarded or not. It was just another repeat for the Celtics. You start letting teams get comfortable, and then they can start going off. The Celtics took a while to shoot themselves back into the game, and mostly it was Kemba Walker. The Bucks got up big and kind of, I guess, relaxed a little bit, and Kemba was able to get going and have that huge 24 points in the second quarter. In a second quarter that the Celtics actually lost, they gave up 40 points. So 76 points in the first half, just very poor defense. And allowing the Bucks to get comfortable, by the time they got to a point there in the second quarter where it looked like maybe they could make a move, the Bucks were just feeling it. The best thing that happened to the Celtics was the halftime, where Milwaukee could kind of cool off a little bit and relax and kind of feel a little too good about themselves. So the Celtics came out in the third quarter and made that run. Now, because the Celtics can't play everybody, their starters, 48 minutes a game, they had to put their bench in, and the bench was not good. Celtics bench got outscored 48-23 in this game, and being shorthanded, no Jaylen Brown, does take a little bit. You know, you don't have Marcus Smart coming off the bench. Now, does Marcus Smart have the 24 points on 6 of 15 shooting, 5 of 10 from 3 like he did? I mean, just an awesome shooting night for him. 7 of 7 from the line. Like, does he have that night coming off the bench? I don't know. It's different. You'd like to think that he would, but it's different. It's a different feel. The Celtics relying on Javonte Green, Brad Wanamaker, Semi Ojeleye, and I want, you know, Grant Williams. They had moments here and there, but like that was just not going to get the job done against the Bucks bench, where DiVincenzo gets hot and George Hill is the best 3-point shooter in the league right now, and Ersan Ilyasova comes in and has a tendency to kill the Celtics, and Robin Lopez is big, and Kyle Korver gets a few minutes and starts drilling shots because that's what Kyle Korver does. The Celtics bench, still, we've talked about it how many times, they're just not designed to kind of hang with that. The Bucks are the best team in the NBA right now for a reason. They not only play well because of Giannis, they have a pretty good plus-minus. Their net rating, I think, would be like fifth or sixth in the league without Giannis on the floor. So their bench units without Giannis are still performing very well. That was always going to be a problem for the Celtics coming into this game, and especially without Jaylen, there was a definite drop-off. So in the third quarter, when Daniel Theis, who was very instrumental in that third quarter run to get the Celtics close, when he had to go to the bench with four fouls and Enes Kanter came in. Not that this was all Enes Kanter's fault, and I'll talk more about Enes later, but that bench unit struggled and gave up a big run at the end of the third quarter that made it really feel out of reach. Celtics, to their credit, came back in the fourth, had a very nice comeback. Kemba Walker, again, carrying the team in the fourth quarter. Marcus Smart in the fourth quarter, pitching in. Enes Kanter at the beginning of the fourth quarter did a pretty nice job. Jason Tatum played most of the fourth quarter and chipped in. Gordon Hayward shook off what was a very bad night, and I'll talk about Gordon Hayward after the break, but Gordon Hayward's fourth quarter was 7 points on one of two. Basically, he took 2 3-pointers and he hit one, and he hit 4 free throws. So 7 points in the fourth quarter where Gordon Hayward kind of finally woke up, but just not enough. So that's kind of like the flow of the game. The Celtics just, you know, what am I going to say? They didn't have it at the beginning. Brad Stevens in the quarter break interview said it looked like we were stuck in mud. We're running in mud. And it's true. I think there was some element of they just kind of felt, I'm sure they felt the schedule. I'm sure that was part of it. But at the same time, and I just went into the whole thing yesterday about excuses versus explanation. The explanation is that they were probably tired, but at the same time, you can't get yourself down 27. There has to be at some point, some element of, you know, whatever it is, you want to call it pride, you want to call it effort, whatever it is, there has to be a point where the execution, you just have to focus on the execution and do something to stop the other team. You have to get up in their airspace. You just have to find it in there somehow, find a way to dig deep and stop that run. Like, I understand getting down 15, getting down 27, even down 20. Like, that 27 is just such a big number. So, and that's a combination of things. I mean, maybe Brad Stevens needs to use his timeouts better. I thought one moment really early on that showed, I think, Mike Budenholzer's coaching was the Celtics, I think, cut it to 15-8. And Budenholzer calls a timeout. Like, they were up big. The Celtics made a little bit of a, okay, we get it down below 10. And the Bucks call a timeout right there to immediately cut the Celtics momentum. We saw Greg Popovich do this. And if there's any real criticism of Brad Stevens, I think his desire to hold on to timeouts or try to let his team play through things, I think he just has to take a little bit more control in those situations. Budenholzer calls that timeout down up 15-8. All of a sudden they come out, they run a play, they get a three. It's up to 18-8 again. And then they just continue hitting threes after that. It just felt like a little bit of a momentum shift. It seemed like the Celtics might have had a little bit of energy there. And if Budenholzer didn't call a timeout, maybe they get to 15-10 or 15-12. And maybe it's a different game at that point. So coaching, using timeouts, substitutions, although, you know, we could talk about, I guess, lineup changes or whatever, but I don't want to overreact. I really don't think there's need to overreact just yet, but there's some element of everybody's accountable, coaching, players, and we'll see over the next few weeks if the Celtics, how the Celtics continue to respond to this now that they're not playing the back-to-backs. What do they do? Do they recover? Or is this part of a slide that maybe Danny Ainge has to get involved and make some sort of move? That brings me to Gordon Hayward. And we're going to take a break and come back and talk about Gordon Hayward next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, you can try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you're tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain, MyBookie wants to get you and your mind off of everything else and get back in the game. If you join right now, MyBookie will match you halfway all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So the most common question, comment, attempt at trolling that I got after this game, during this game, was what's up with Gordon Hayward? And he's not having the best stretch of his life, although he just had this 1-for-10 game against Milwaukee, but like I just said, he had 7 points in the fourth quarter, so he was part of that fourth quarter run. So he had a bad first few quarters, and he stepped up in the fourth quarter. He's coming off a game where he shot 11 of 15 and had 25 points against the Detroit Pistons, and he had the 8-for-11 game against the New Orleans Pelicans, so he's had some big shooting nights. The problem with Hayward is people see the inconsistent shooting. So you just step backwards, 10% shooting against Milwaukee, 73% against Detroit, 36% against Chicago, 73% against New Orleans, 36% against Philly, 50% against San Antonio. And it really alternates almost every other game. But for the totality of the season, it looks okay. Like, his overall season is not so bad. He's shooting 52% from the field. Now, he's averaging 16 points. He was averaging close to 20 before he got hurt and broke his hand. His overall shooting, 35% from three. He should be a little bit better than that. He's not shot well from three recently. He's not getting a ton of free throws, which is a problem. And so he's not having that very obvious impact on a regular basis. And I think everybody can acknowledge that he's not. So what's the deal? What's the deal with Gordon Hayward? Everybody wants Gordon Hayward to be awesome all the time. Obviously, he's making a ton of money. So everybody wants him to play like a $30 million guy because people have an idea of what a $30 million guy is supposed to play like. And when they paid him that money, he was playing like that for the Utah Jazz. So obvious things happened. You can't control the injury that he had. You can't control the fact that the second surgery cost him last summer or the previous summer. And then that kind of derailed last season. And on top of that, you can't control that Kyrie kind of was at the center of a lot of crap. And that really exacerbated a very, very tough situation. So 2 of the 4 years, potentially for Gordon Hayward, have sort of been lost. And now Gordon's back here in his third year, fully healthy, no injury excuses, at least for the ankle. And we're sitting here like, okay, time to show us that Utah stuff. Will he ever be Utah Gordon Hayward? I don't know. That was also such a different situation because he was the guy in Utah. Like, he could do the things that he's not able to do now. Like, he's here on a team with Kemba and Jalen and Jason, and he's one of four guys, as opposed to being the guy who had the ball in his hand very often, initiating the offense. You look at some of those Utah, the way they used to run offenses for him. They're not doing the exact same thing for Hayward, which led to my kind of question of, should he come off the bench? Because if you bring him off the bench, then you can run some things for Hayward. and you can get him to be more aggressive. And you can still run him with your best five, but maybe starting Marcus Smart and putting him out there and having that little extra defensive oomph to start games, and maybe having that with Kemba and Jalen and Jason, you have three guys that are shoot, you know, need the ball versus a fourth in Hayward. When Hayward comes in, he can kind of go for his. So if there's anything to be done, I'm still leaning a little bit towards that, because Hayward needs to look for his shot more. I think the thing that stands out is his lack of aggression, or, and I don't want to say like, it seems like a lack of aggression because he's not attacking all the time. But also when you look at how Milwaukee plays, they're so big that he's not one to force things. Not in this situation, especially. He's not going to go out there and just really take eight shots in a quarter unless the defense dictates that. And sometimes I kind of look at him and say, all right, well, you should take that shot. Just, it's a little contested, but take it. But he's going to make the right play. He's going to pass. When he is contested, he's going to pass the ball. And he trusts the guys. He will pass the ball to Semi Ojeleye when Semi Ojeleye is open in the corner. But frankly, I'd rather see Hayward take a lightly contested shot versus Semi taking an open shot. That's kind of where I am. Like, no offense to Semi Ojeleye, who can still hit those shots, but sometimes I just would rather see Hayward look for his own offense. And I know that there's been some chatter recently about, okay, we got to trade him and you have to start exploring trades for Gordon Hayward. And sure, I understand that, completely understand that. But at the same time, I don't see what you get back for Hayward that makes much sense. And these, you know, the emotional outreach of, well, we gotta trade him for whatever we can get. Like, that's an overreaction. There are moves that I can understand. If some sort of return for Hayward can get you something like what the Sixers got for, or what Minnesota got for Jimmy Butler, a Dario Saric, Robert Covington type of return where you get two really useful bench players for a Gordon Hayward. Like, yeah, you've got to open your mind to stuff like that. I'm not against that, but I don't think those situations exist. I don't think that works. I don't think that's going to be available. I just don't think that's going to be available. And you don't just give them up for nothing. Like, that's just poor team management. So I'd rather see how he works off the bench. And I think that you get two impacts with that. You get Marcus Smart maybe not forcing things. And he hasn't forced things when, you know, now that Kemba's back, but Marcus in a situation where there are three obviously better scorers out there kind of keeps him, it gets him more open shots because they're going to leave him open and he can knock down those more open shots, because who are you going to help off of? You're certainly not going to help off any of those other guys, Jalen, Jason, and Kemba. So he has an opportunity to get his offense going a little bit more. And then when Hayward comes in, if you do bring him off the bench, then you can bring Hayward and, I don't know, Cantor and run pick and roll with those two guys. Hayward can run the pick and roll very, very well. He's exceptional at it. You can bring him in with Grant. You can, and he just, I think his level of play, his level of playmaking can raise the games of the guys he's in with while also he can be aggressive and look for his own shot. So, if anything, that's what I'm looking for. And maybe that's something, I don't know if the Celtics would consider it. It worked for them a little bit last year. And again, it's just a little bit of a tweak in the minute. Like, it's not going to mean he plays less minutes. He'll still be in closing lineups. I think it just, the situation, the way the Celtics are built, I think that's a solution. I feel like that's a possible solution. So that's my take on Gordon Hayward. Essentially, trading him, sure, be open to trades for Gordon Hayward. I don't think that they exist. And anything short of a trade that makes sense for the Celtics is an overreaction, an emotional overreaction. When I come back, some final thoughts on this game and just kind of a reassessment of where the Celtics are. Stick around for more Locked On Celtics.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
A couple of other notes from this loss to the Milwaukee Bucks. The way they played Enes Kanter had moments where he was just very much not effective, and then later on, he was effective. I am afraid that the Celtics do get into a little bit of a habit of just going to Enes Kanter post-ups when he's in the game, because that's his offensive effectiveness. He can run a pick and roll and roll a little bit, but he just wants to post up. And that's fine, but I think it's been established now that post ups are not always the most efficient way to play basketball. Now, he's had a pretty good stretch. I don't know that Enes Kanter posting up is going to be how the Celtics offense gets carried for the long haul. I don't like, and it's weird for me to say because I grew up myself as a post player. Like, the entire reason I'm here talking to you is because I watched Kevin McHale play basketball and I copied his moves when I was in high school, got good enough at that, and became good enough at basketball that dominoes fell to the point where I got this job. Like, that's that's my entire existence in this realm is based on post basketball. And now I'm sitting here saying, I don't think the Celtics should be posting up Enes Kanter all the time. And I think there were some points in this game where things started to fall apart. Third quarter, end of third quarter, it's forcing a little bit too much Enes Kanter post-ups. I will say that thinking it through, considering the way the Celtics offense was running, it was as good a shot as any. Like, they weren't going to play Grant Williams because Milwaukee was daring Grant Williams to shoot. And he took 4 3-pointers in the first half. And they were open, and he hit one of them. But they were going to let him shoot. So Brad didn't want to go to that. And with, you know, Javonte Green out there, he's not going to carry an offense. So I understand that at that point you're like, you know what, a Kanter post up, let's just roll with it and see how far we can take this. But if that's a habit the Celtics fall into, then I think that's something that they might need to reassess. Clearly the Celtics miss Rob Williams. His athleticism could have really hurt the Milwaukee Bucks, I think, in this one. You know, rolling and testing Brook Lopez, I think that would have helped a lot. But Rob Williams not coming back, not before the All-Star break. So, and you know, another thing is a couple of bad bounces. There was a play in the third quarter, fourth quarter. It was definitely not in the fourth quarter. There was a play in the third where the Celtics get a stop. They were down 6. They get a stop, but the ball bounces off of 2 Celtics. It was going to go out of bounds, and Kemba Walker dives to save it, but he saves it underneath the Milwaukee basket, and they get the ball, and they go, they're now up eight. So the Celtics, instead of that being down six and with the ball, they end up down eight and taking the ball out of bounds against a set Milwaukee defense. That's a big, crucial run, because if the Celtics come down in transition in that spot, who knows? You get it to four, you get it to three maybe. And that could change the entire dynamic of this game. But the Celtics, that was just a bad bounce. And then in the fourth quarter, there was a bounce where the Celtics slapped it away from Lopez, and he ends up getting it back. The ball bounces around off of a couple of guys, and he ends up getting it back. Not only does he put it in, but he gets a foul. He gets an and one. So you go from 10, down 10 with the ball in the fourth quarter, to down 12 plus the free throw, a couple of bounces. On top of everything that I said earlier, a couple of things go wrong, a couple of bounces go the wrong way, and your chance to win this game, even after everything, goes away. And this is why they have to be more focused and try to execute better. When the mind is not there, they have to really just go through their progressions and execute better, because those 50-50 balls, those bad bounces, that decides a game. And you don't want to put yourself in a position where you need those bounces to go your way. So that's a couple of things that, you know, that's basketball. They still came back. So takeaway from this game is the Celtics still, you know, they got down. They were in a bad situation with the back-to-back and the schedule, blah, blah, blah. They still fought to come back, and they still actually had a chance. They had a chance to win in Milwaukee, even after all of that. And that kind of opens up the question about how good can the Celtics be? Because now you say, well, hey, look, if they get Jaylen Brown back and he plays in this game and things aren't, you know, the schedule isn't the way it is in a playoff situation, if everybody's healthy and there's a game or two, a day or two between games, you don't have that fatigue factor. Well, how good can the Celtics be in that situation? Like that, you raise a legitimate question there. So the Celtics still have that, well, you know, that it looked like for a while that, okay, Milwaukee's clearly the class of the league, class of the East, and they still are, but the Celtics comeback shows, like, you know, if Milwaukee relaxes a little bit, the Celtics can give it right back to them. The Celtics relaxed and took it on the chin hard from Milwaukee, but the second Milwaukee lets their guard down, the Celtics can come at you, and they have a powerful attack, and they still weren't at full strength. So there's definitely something to kind of be proud of there. I mean, I'm not trying to make this into some big moral victory, but I am saying that the question is there. Like, when you're doing an analysis of the Celtics versus the Bucks, you can say, hey, look, you know, this thing happened. So we go into, the Celtics have now played 40 games. So the next game is the actual halfway point. The Celtics go into that halfway point 27-13. They were hot. They were one of three teams in the NBA to have single-digit losses, and now they've now fallen to 13 losses. So they've hit a bit of a slide. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They've now have a two-game losing streak. As part of that, they previously had a three-game losing streak. So a little bit of a regression to the mean. And like I talked about in the podcast with Chuck, you're still sitting here saying 27-13 halfway through the season with the, you know, a differential, a point differential that's still second best in the East and fourth overall in the NBA and a 67.5% winning percentage. It's all still something that the Celtics should take. And there's, like I said, a little bit of a regression to the mean, but still pretty good. And maybe there is a little bit of the schedule is a little bit easier. If we're going to talk about how hard the Celtics schedule has been lately, it stands to reason that maybe some of the schedule being a little easier earlier helped them out. And that's how they got through some of those spots. So Celtics still a top three team and kind of where we expect them to be. Really, after all the ups and downs, this is about as where we thought they would be. Third, fourth in the East coming into the season, we thought. So they still are ahead, actually, of expectations. So it sucks. The last couple of games have been disappointing. This stretch in January has been tough. But the turbulence that I've mentioned in the past is kind of over. And might be a couple more bumps along the way here in January. But really, all in all, it's not bad. It's really not that bad. They have things to fix for sure. And there are certainly questions. But those questions were always going to persist for the Celtics. So we'll see how they do moving forward. That is the podcast schedule for the week. Happy Friday to everybody. Hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. We're back next week, Monday through Friday, with another set of free podcasts for you. So subscribe if you haven't and give us that 5-star rating and good written review if you have. And share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.